Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. Jordan Buscarini alongside Travis Anderson as we get ready to kick off what's going to be a very busy show. It's MLK Day, so plenty of NBA basketball throughout the entire day, and some news coming from all over. The NFL, Major League Baseball, and we'll also talk some local sports as well. Travis, obviously today we're going to put heavy emphasis on the NFL. Yesterday we had a couple of crazy games. First off, Pittsburgh, a team that I like to get to the Super Bowl, falling to a team that I said be aware of, that was the Jacksonville Jaguars. I didn't think there was any way Jacksonville would be able to beat the Steelers if they scored 42 points, but they found a way to do so.
They did. They got a couple turnovers, which they needed. They got a scoop and score off the one Ben
that
fumble.
That changed the entire game.
And that changed the game, because you could feel Pittsburgh had the momentum swinging their way, and then they have that fumble, and Jacksonville scores, and Pittsburgh was just playing catch-up the whole entire day and really just dug themselves a big hole.
Yeah, that was definitely a... they were driving on that particular possession as well. Yeah, that definitely changed the momentum of the game. Telvin Smith has been so good for Jacksonville all year long. I play in a fantasy football league where you have to use individual defensive players. Telvin Smith is a guy that definitely helped me win my league. I mean, he's been that good all year long. Did not surprise me one bit that Telvin Smith managed to rise to the occasion. Again, defensively, look, I think Jacksonville can go on the road and beat New England. I think they can.
Yeah.
I don't know that they will, but I think they're fully capable. I don't view Jacksonville as some massive underdog that I think a lot of pundits do. On the flip side, I do view Philly as that massive underdog. And what a way to end a game. Case Keenum just continues to find ways to get Minnesota out of holes. I could not believe that game, hooking up with Stephon Diggs as time expires. Marcus Williams, a Ute guy, kid that I love, a California kid that played for the University of Utah. And boy, he had a blunder that he's going to be remembered for that blunder for a very long time. I think he's going to be a very productive pro. Again, he's a rookie, had a great year, had something like 75 tackles and 4 or 5 picks this season, had an interception in this game, which got New Orleans back in it. But the Marcus Williams blunder is what will always stand out in that game. Keep your head up. It's fundamental. Head up. You can't tackle what you can't see.
Yeah, just a tough break for that kid, because he's a good kid and just made one mistake. And if it wasn't for his interception earlier in the game,
the game's over anyway.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But nobody remembers that now.
No, they remember that final play, which is a tough one for him, but he'll be better for it in the long run.
I hope so. I'm definitely a Marcus Williams fan. It was sad to see that game come to an end like that. If you're a New Orleans fan, if you're a Minnesota fan, boy, you're riding a high today. We'll talk more NFL football coming up in just a bit. But as far as NFL football goes, there is another coaching change. The Tennessee Titans have parted ways with Mike Mularkey. Let's be honest. They didn't want him as their head coach. And the fact that he beat Kansas City gave him maybe an extra week as head coach. They were ready to let Mularkey go at the end of that Kansas City game, had Kansas City held on to win.
Yeah,
Let's be honest.
They were talking extension. Oh, we're going to extend this guy.
No, the owner comes out.
That's just a PR move to buy another week of Mike Mularkey. And then today, finally, they let him go. So who knows where they're going to go, because with Josh McDaniels taking the Colts job, I would prefer probably taking the Titan job over the Colts job if I was McDaniels, but I don't know where Tennessee goes now.
Well, reports say today that the Giants will actually hire Pat Shurmur, who's the current offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings. Had a head coaching tenure with the Cleveland Browns. I believe he finished 9-23 as head coach of the Browns. Had some success as the offensive coordinator in St. Louis. That's where he got to know Sam Bradford. That's part of the reason why the Vikings acquired Sam Bradford, and now he's working wonders with Case Keenum. You know, you talk about quarterback whisperers, quarterback gurus. Go ahead and throw Pat Shurmur in there. He's worked magic with a lot of quarterbacks. The fact that the Minnesota Vikings are in the NFC Championship with the likes of Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, and Case Keenum. I mean, you look at the injury history and the unknown history, the struggles that Case Keenum has had traditionally in his NFL career. Pat Shurmur, go ahead and throw him on the list of quarterback whisperers. But it's expected that he'll take the Giants' job. It's expected that McDaniels will take the Colts' job. If Andrew Luck is healthy, I love the fit there. If that's the case, what route does Arizona and Tennessee go?
I don't know. I don't know what route you can go at this point.
No way. No way is it Jeff Fisher, right? No way.
My goodness, could you imagine?
No way.
I mean, there's rumblings.
I know there's rumblings.
And that'd be, I mean, isn't Mularkey and Fisher basically the same guy?
No, Mularkey's better than Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, they're average.
The Titans overachieved in the playoffs. Jeff Fisher, he's Mr. 7-9, Mr. 6-10. That's what he is.
But I don't know what names out there that Tennessee could
go either.
With.
They're behind the eight ball. I don't know if it would have mattered. If you would have let Mularkey go last week, would it have mattered? I don't know. I mean, Josh McDaniels hasn't officially signed on with Indianapolis. So it's not as if he could, you know, it's not as if he's locked in, at least from the reports. Same thing with Pat Shurmur. I would love to see one of those guys take over Marcus Mariota. I think he's got a load of potential. Single-handedly got the Titans to the playoffs this year offensively. They have some weapons to work with Derrick Henry and Delanie Walker. You know I'm a huge Delanie Walker guy. I don't know. It's an interesting scenario starting to boil up in the NFL. Let's step away from the NFL for just a moment. I want to talk Major League Baseball. This move went down a couple of hours ago. The Pirates are going to send Andrew McCutchen to the Giants. It's the second move that the Pirates have made now in the past 2 days. It's not clear what Pittsburgh's going to receive, but McCutchen's a five-time All-Star coming off a season in which he hit, what, 373? I think he had a on-base percentage of 363. Not the Andrew McCutchen of 2015. Again, this is proof that Pittsburgh is hitting the reset button, and San Francisco is trying to keep pace with the Dodgers and the Rockies and the Diamondbacks in the NL West, and they're still very far behind the eight ball. I know we have Giant fans that listen to the show. We have Bill Lasky, who used to play for the Giants. It's a great move in 2015. I don't think it's a high-impact move for the Giants. I just don't.
I don't either. I think Andrew McCutchen is a shell of himself. He's never going to be that player that he was in 2015, and for the Giants, it's an okay move. It's a move that gets your fan base excited, and that's about it.
Yeah, he's going into the final year of his contract, set to make $14.5 million in 2018. And we take a look at the NBA. Like I said, there's been games all day. We actually have one going on right now. The Lakers and the Grizzlies in the first quarter, midway through, the Grizzlies with a five-point lead over the Lakers. We take a look at some of the finals. The Hornets topped the Pistons earlier today, 118-107. Dwight Howard had 21 points and 17 boards in that contest. Philly logs a victory. They're back in the 500 mark, 10-10 at home, 20-20 overall in the season. They top Toronto. That's a big win, 117-111. Joel Embiid registers a double-double with 34 points and 11 rebounds. Milwaukee tops Washington. The Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo, 27 points, 20 boards, 6 assists. Milwaukee wins 104-95. The Hawks top the Spurs, 102-99. The Spurs starting to blunder a little bit here. LaMarcus Aldridge, 25 points, 11 boards, not enough. It was Dennis Schroeder leading the way for Atlanta with 26 points and 7 assists. The Knicks beat the Nets 119-104. Kristaps Porzingis scored 26 points in that victory. It was Chicago over Miami as well earlier today, 119-111. Goran Dragic in this game played well at 22 points and 9 assists, but it wasn't enough. Justin Holiday leads the Bulls with 25 points. Still to come tonight, we have a few games to get to. The Kings will take on the Thunder at 6 p.m. We get the Warriors at the Cavaliers. That's obviously the marquee matchup on MLK Day. Tonight here on KOAL, the Utah Jazz will take on the Indiana Pacers. 7 o'clock start time there. David Locke and Ron Boone will begin their broadcast at 6:50. And then we get the Rockets and the Clippers in the nightcap at 8:30. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to break for just a moment. We'll give you the local sports recap. Plus, we're going to be joined by Coach Kirk Christiansen of the Emory Spartan Wrestling Team here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss the...
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Brand new week here on Drive Time Sports, and as far as the Coach's Corner goes, we're going to start by talking about some wrestling. We only have a few weeks left in the wrestling season. In fact, you look, and before you know it, baseball is going to be starting. We've got like a month left in the high school basketball season. That's how fast things are flying. The Emory Spartan wrestling team traveled on the road. They were in Gunnison over the weekend, and they performed quite well. Several wrestlers really showing up, a lot of matches. A lot for the coaching staff to keep track of. That's what we're going to talk about right now. Joining us over the phone, we have Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory Spartan Wrestling Squad. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, good to be here.
Coach, it was a busy weekend for you guys. Busy week for you in general as we get down to the final couple of weeks of the wrestling season. I mean, it's going by in a real blur. But you guys were in Gunnison both Friday and Saturday, and you guys got a lot of wrestling. You and I were going over the results off the cuff, and boy, man, a lot of action for this wrestling team on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, we went to a round-robin tournament over there. I think they had 14 teams at it, and they kind of split them into pools, and they did 8, 9, and 10-man pools, kind of a 10-man round-robin bracket, and they all got a bunch of matches in, and we come out of there with a lot of wins. And we learned a lot and polished some of our techniques and got some good ideas on how to beat some of those upper-level wrestlers. And it was a really, really good tournament. The kids wrestled great.
So many matches for all these kids. I mean, if you look at some of the results, you know, AC Reeve gets 9 matches. You know, you look at Drake Mangum gets 9 matches. Gage Mangum gets close to 10 matches. I mean, for a coach, how do you manage to try to put your attention, you know, all the way around when you have so many kids and so many events? I mean, it's impossible to watch every single one live.
Oh, it was crazy, and I got to give a big shout out to my stat girls for being there to video them all. And we've been reviewing video the rest of the weekend and having a ball. And, you know, they were on 6 mats in one gym, so that helped. And then, you know, my assistant coaches are amazing. I have got a wonderful coaching staff this year. Coach Thornley, Coach Robbie, and John Mangum, and Travis Allen. And they were good to help me spread out. And we tried to keep at least one coach with each kid that was wrestling at a time, and they wrestled really well.
As you and I were going over the records, a couple of kids that stood out, I mean, Gus Dalton and Corby Christiansen, these two come away with only one loss over the course of the entire weekend, and we're talking about 8 to 9 matches for both these guys.
Yeah, they wrestled great, and only the upper-level wrestlers give these two a challenge, so I was really glad to see that there was some kids there that will push their buttons and make them come home and work on some stuff and get them prepared and get them tight and right for the postseason. And it's coming up here real quick, so we're really excited about it. You know, we did come out of the weekend with some bumps and bruises. We got some sore ribs and sore fingers and sore elbows and stuff like that, and they wrestled through pain and came out, you know, pretty much everybody who went in the tournament finished, but we did get Gage Mangum banged up, so he didn't finish the last couple, so a couple of those losses were forfeits for him, but he did great, and we're really proud of him for jumping up and filling a varsity spot for us there. Chase went out on an ankle injury the night before at practice, so we were pretty bummed to have him out, but everybody wrestled really good.
One of the kids that continues to stand out, and every time you and I have a conversation, I mean, we're talking about him getting victories, it's AC Reeve, the heavyweight spot for you guys. I mean, has AC really developed into a strong, strong possibility of a state champion for you guys at the top at 285?
He's sitting ranked number 2 right now. You know, they update these rankings every week. And I'm so excited. We talked about this the first of the season. I have 4 number 2 seeds going into the postseason right now. And I'm super charged about that. And AC's one of them. You know, Corby has a co-2 seed with the South Summit kid with a GWAB kid over them at 113. I've got Gus Dalton ranked 2nd. I split with 2nd and 3rd at 152. I've got Newt ranked 2 at 170, and I've got AC ranked number 2 at heavyweight. And right there pushing him every day is Drake Hoffman, who's a ranked wrestler, is our junior varsity wrestler.
at 285. And he's a little light for the class, you know, weighing right around 250 and wrestling those big boys like a dream. So, you know, WrestleLoft last week were a two-point match between AC and Drake. So these guys are pushing each other hard in the room. And with those guys pushing like that, things look really good. You know, my 106-pounders, I've got two of them that are top eight in the state right now. I believe Dwayne's ranked number five at 120. Drake Mangum is ranked number six. Zach World's ranked number five at 32. You know, we've got Briar Macarello, who took out two ranked kids this weekend again at 138. We don't have him in the ranking yet, but he'll be there. And at 145, I believe McKay is sitting split fourth, fifth. So, you know, come tournament play, line bracket play, our team's going to shine. We're going to put points on the board and really do well. And I'm deep in those lower weights, and they're going to knock out a lot of varsity kids and keep them from scoring points against us. You know, we've got Jaron and Dax and you know, Cage Mangum at 26. And Aiden Mortensen's another one of our freshmen that's really coming along and wrestling well at 132. And, you know, he's been between 38 and 32. And we've got also Zane DeFace healthy again back at 120. So, I mean, I am pretty deep at 120 on guys that can beat varsity kids. So, and that's one we forgot to talk about. Zane DeFay at the junior varsity level this weekend, he wrestled amazing too. So
definitely a lot to get excited about. Definitely a lot, Coach. Again, we're being joined by Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory Sport and Wrestling Team. You brought up an interesting point there, Coach, something that I've never really thought about. Some of the younger kids may be clearing a path for some of the varsity kids on this team. That's an interesting dynamic, I guess, I never really thought about when we talk about wrestling, especially state tournament time.
Yes, you know, state tournament time. In the divisional tournament especially, we hope to push at least two in every weight class into the top eight at divisionals and get them into the 16-man bracket at the state tournament. And, you know, we can put two individuals in at each weight class, and those lower five weight classes, we should be able to get it done. And then that also helps us, you know, at the state tournament, take out some of those scoring wrestlers for the opposing teams, and it helps us all the way through. So I'm really kind of excited to see what kind of numbers we can put on the board, what kind of team points we can score with our wrestlers, because, you know, the wrestlers that I have are tight and right. We're excited about them.
Coach, let's take a look at what the schedule looks like for you guys this week. You'll travel to Manti on Wednesday, and then you're going to go to the Rockwell Rumble, which is going to be at Utah Valley on both Friday and Saturday. So, again, a very busy week for you guys as we continue to just move right through the month of January. It doesn't slow down anytime soon.
No, it doesn't. And Manti should be, you know, they've got a couple of ranked wrestlers in a couple of weight classes. We're going to have our hands full, but as a whole, we should dominate Manti, and we should come out of there healthy and tight and right and ready to wrestle at the Rumble. And the Rockwell Rumble is a national invitational, and, you know, it's kind of the elite of the elite. These kids will march in there in a 64 or a 32-man bracket and have to survive to medals. So the ones that are going, they've got their hands full, and they know what level that we're going to wrestle at. And the neat part about that is that it's at the same venue as the state tournament, which gets these guys excited about wrestling there. It gets them used to the facility. They can take those tough matches home there in that atmosphere and visualize that state tournament and really come back ready to wrestle.
That's, again, another very interesting point because, you know, we always talk about home court advantage for Emory in basketball. The fact that you have the standalone hoops and the depth perception for opposing teams is completely different when they come into the Spartan Center. And, of course, home field advantage always seems to play a factor in baseball and football. Wrestling, I mean, getting to know the facility in itself, it can't hurt. I mean, knowing the environment you're going to be in when you're competing for a state championship.
Yeah, you know what? Anytime you can go wrestle in the place that you're going to do your finals in and have a feel for that and you know, if you own it in your mind, you own it in reality. And if you can go see that and smell it and taste it, and I'm big on visualization, so these guys can go wrestle as tough a matches as they're going to see up there this weekend, and then come back for the state finals ready to wrestle. So,
well, as the schedule moves on, Coach, as far as home wrestling meets go, I don't have the schedule in front of me. We're getting down to it, right, as far as home meets go?
Yeah, we're getting, I've got two more. I've got one more, excuse me. North San Pete's going to come, not this week, but next week. We go to Gunnison on Tuesday, and they come on Wednesday, and then we do a week off, and then divisionals, so it'll be good.
Yeah, the season is rapidly coming to an end. I can't believe how fast it's moving. Again, already in the middle of January. And, Coach, it's always fun to get you on and get updates on this team. My old boys are working extremely hard, so I appreciate you making out the time to talk a little bit about their progress this deep into the season.
Yep, appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Definitely, Coach. We'll talk again real soon.
Okay.
Again, that's Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory Sport and Wrestling Team talking about that high tempo, that high schedule. It's a grind for wrestling. I'm kind of shocked that injuries don't occur more often in that sport. It's such a physical, demanding schedule for these kids. And we get down to the final few weeks of the season. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We're going to talk NFL football. Going beyond the X's and O's, were the Pittsburgh Steelers outcoached? Was it that simple? Was Mike Tomlin outcoached as Pittsburgh fell victim to the upset bug yesterday? We'll talk about that. Plus, look ahead of the NFC-AFC championship games. That's coming up next on Drive Time Sports.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Zero name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Zero name, no gimmicks.
That's why I ain't got no gimmicks.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Talk some NFL football. AFC-NFC Championship is set. We get New England and Jacksonville in the AFC. We get Minnesota and Philadelphia in the NFC. And, I mean, you can do the math. Tom Brady, Nick Foles, Case Keenum, Blake Bortles. Those are your final four quarterbacks remaining. Now, here's the interesting thing that I continue to hear, and it's completely irrelevant in my opinion. Tom Brady against Blake Bortles. Well, guess what? Blake Bortles doesn't have to go up against Tom Brady. He's never going to see Tom Brady. Tom Brady doesn't play defense. Same thing with Case Keenum and Nick Foles. That's the one good thing, that the one positive for Jacksonville. On the flip side, Tom Brady's going to have to see a very, very good defense, and Blake Bortles is going to have to see an improved New England Patriot defense. But that's the storyline I keep hearing. The four quarterbacks that remain, yeah, one of them is not like the rest. I get that. But don't sleep on Jacksonville. I know one team that did sleep on Jacksonville. And I don't want to make this entire segment about the Steelers losing, because the big story is Jacksonville won. But at the end of the day, that's what we're going to make this segment, because that's the big storyline. The Pittsburgh Steelers lost. That's the storyline today. Call it disrespectful to the Jacksonville Jaguars if you want, that's fine. But I mean, look at some of these quotes. We should win it all. That was Mike Tomlin in November. We're going to play the Patriots again. We can play them in hell. We can play them in Haiti. We can play them in New England. We're going to win. That was Mike Mitchell 3 weeks ago. Ben Roethlisberger just a couple of weeks ago. I'll give you guys one guess who you think I want to play. You're not going to get the Patriots now. Look, that right there was obvious in this football game, that Pittsburgh had overlooked Jacksonville. Is that an indictment on Mike Tomlin? Maybe. You can take it that way. But I also think it's the mind control that the New England Patriots have on everyone else in the NFL, particularly in the AFC. That's the way I view that. You look past the idea that you got to beat Blake Bortles, right? Because Tom Brady's waiting for you. That's the mind control. That's what happens when you go toe-to-toe with a dynasty, or when you create a dynasty. New England has the mental edge over every single team they play, and because of that, in large part, Jacksonville is moving on to the AFC Championship and not Pittsburgh. I don't think I'm wrong in that assessment either.
You're not. And for the Steelers, this is a team that probably has the most talent in the league, and they underachieved again. This is a team that should have at least made one Super Bowl with this group, and they haven't won it in 9 years. They haven't won a Super Bowl in, 9 years? So for Pittsburgh, I think it starts with Mike Tomlin. He doesn't have control over his team, and you can tell by these comments where they're looking ahead to the Patriots, but there's a game this week, and they weren't focused, and they weren't ready, and they lost.
All right, there's two trains of thought at the end of this, at the end of yesterday's game. I think you have Steeler fans who were rightfully so upset about Mike Tomlin and believe that he should be on the hottest seat in the National Football League going into next season. I don't believe that Tomlin should go anywhere. I think the Steelers have one of the best coaches in the NFL that had some questionable decision-making yesterday. Okay, and that's obvious. We can talk about the fourth and one call. We can talk about everything that led up to the fourth quarter. But in the fourth quarter, this kind of stuff is amplified. Okay, like Williams for the Saints yesterday, it's amplified. His mistake in the fourth quarter is amplified, and it's the same with Mike Tomlin. Coaches fall underneath that same umbrella. The Steelers decided to kick an onside with two timeouts and the two-minute warning rather than kicking it deep when you know that Jacksonville is going to go, they're going to run the ball three times. So here was my train of thought on this, and I'm not an NFL football coach, and it's easy on Monday to sit here and look back on the situation and say, well, he should have done this. They're going to run it three times regardless. Okay, they're going to run it three times. If you don't recover the onside, odds are they're going to be in field goal range and it's a two-possession game once again. Okay, they're going to run it three times if you kick it out of the back of the end zone and they get the ball at the 25-yard line. The difference is it's freaking cold and it's like punting a rock and you're going to get good field position. I didn't understand the onside kick. I really didn't. I don't know if Pittsburgh's looking at the whole thing, if Tomlin's looking at the grand scheme of things and saying, they've put up 42 points. I don't know if we can stop them at this particular time in the game. We're going to kick an onside. I don't agree with that logic because, at that point, they hadn't put up 42 points. Offensively, they hadn't put up 42 points because we talked about the Telvin Smith fumble recovery. I didn't quite get that. Then once you kick the onside and didn't recover, Tomlin allowed Jacksonville to run an extra 11 seconds off of the clock to get to the two-minute warning before calling a timeout, and I didn't quite get that either. There were just a couple of things at the end of the game. I just didn't understand what Tomlin was doing.
Yeah, he botched those two plays, and maybe it was frustration and a loss of train of thought, but I don't agree with the onside kick because you're just putting Jacksonville in field goal range with the three runs because that's what they're going to do. If you kick it deep out of the end zone, who knows what happens maybe in that scenario, but you're going to play the field position game if you kick it deep instead of the onside kick, so I would have kicked it deep.
Yeah, you know, again, Steeler fans today are extremely upset with Mike Tomlin, maybe rightfully so. They think he should be on the hot seat. I disagree. I don't think he should be on the hot seat. However, we have examined coaches on the hot seat before, and the one thing that they always seem to do is they let go of they make changes to the coaching staff. It's like a last-ditched effort. Okay, look at BYU football. Kalani Sitake was in a corner. He had to make moves to his coaching staff. He is now held accountable. He is coaching for his job at BYU. I think everyone would agree on that. That's why he has wholesale changes to his coaching staff. I think it's almost to that point in Pittsburgh. You take a look at the talent that this team has offensively. They should be putting up 42 points a game. They should.
Yeah.
They are so talented on the offensive side of the ball. If we're talking about Roethlisberger, Brown, Bell, it doesn't matter. They have such a dynamic that no one else in the NFL has. And when I look at the 42 points that they scored yesterday, a lot of it, but Jacksonville was just allowing them to eat chunks of clock in this game. Jacksonville just wanted to make sure that it was going to take them 5, 6, 7 minutes to score a touchdown. It was desperation time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't know that you can give Todd Haley a whole lot of credit on that.
No.
I don't know that the offense was the major problem. But again, going back to the fourth and one play, unless it's Ben Roethlisberger calling an audible at some point in time, it's a terrible call. Just run the ball up the middle, get the 1 yard, continue the drive. Okay, it's a terrible play. It's almost like a revolving door with Pittsburgh, though, because, again, they have so much talent offensively, and they have talent defensively as well, but they continue to fall short with Mike Tomlin. And the one thing in the NFL that you can't do, you can't get caught up with the fact that he won a Super Bowl championship. Well, how long ago was it? 8 years ago he won a championship?
8 or 9 years ago, yeah.
8 or 9 years ago he won a championship. You can't let that prevent you from evolving your coaching staff. And what I'm saying by coaching staff, I'm talking about the front office for Pittsburgh. I don't think it's time for a change, but I think it's time to hold Mike Tomlin accountable for his coaching staff, and I would expect some change in Pittsburgh going into next season. I really would.
They have to. They got to make some changes with the offensive coordinator, but Yeah, who knows how long that Mike Tomlin's leash is after this, and then
he shouldn't go anywhere.
He shouldn't. He's one of the best in the league.
I agree.
But offensively, they have just so much talent, and they just continue to come up short. So you have to make changes somewhere and somehow. And defensively, they got to get better too.
Okay, so here's the question, and this is where I'm going with the last 7-8 minute rant that we just had here on the show. This is where I'm getting at. Pittsburgh is the epitome of stability in the NFL. I mean, really, when you take a look at what Tomlin has accomplished as head coach, and you take a look at the amount of head coaches that Pittsburgh has had during the course of the franchise, and you look at their ability to retain players, look, few are better, if any, in the NFL at the amount of stability that that Pittsburgh has presented to the league. With all that being said, would you rather have a coach? Would you make a change thinking that you can take a coach to the next level, or do you play it safe with stability? Because they're there every year. And I Steeler fans are in a unique position because Buffalo hadn't been to the playoffs in, 17 years?
Yeah.
Rams hadn't been to the playoffs since 2004. Pittsburgh's in the playoffs damn near every single season. They haven't had a lot of success in the playoffs outside of that one Super Bowl with Tomlin here in the last, two decades or so.
Made it, and they lost to Green Bay.
They lost to Green Bay. You got to go back to when they beat Seattle. I mean, so they've had Super Bowl appearances in this millennium, but it doesn't seem like that's enough. The standard is too high. Is the standard too high in Pittsburgh, or are they underachieving with the talent that they have?
I think they're underachieving with the talent they have. It's one of the most talented rosters in football, and they just continue. This team should have made at least one Super Bowl with this group. And last year they lost in the AFC Championship against New England. This year, the second round, it's just they continue to come up short. And I don't know where the problem lies within that organization, where they continue to come up short.
Yeah, I thought this was their year. I really did. I thought that Pittsburgh was going to get to the Super Bowl this season once again. And again, I understand that they have had success, but it just seems like it's kind of a reoccurring thing with Mike Tomlin. And ever since he won that Super Bowl, at the end of the day, you're looking back and questioning what this guy is doing in the postseason. He outdid himself yesterday. I mean, I think that's what it really boils down to. He had the quote in his post-game conference. He said, quote, "We hadn't stopped them convincingly enough to take any other approach." That was his response to kicking the onside. He basically said he didn't trust his defense enough to stop Blake Bortles. That's what he said, right? Yeah. And all we've talked about is how Blake Bortles isn't a very good quarterback. This guy's
fantastic yesterday.
He was great on third down. He was great on third down.
And Pittsburgh couldn't get off the field on third down. And that's where they really lost this game, was not getting off the field with third down. And they've had that problem all year. And if you go back to that New England game, they couldn't get off the field on third down against New England as well.
Yeah, so we say here, and we talk about the offense. And again, the offense was not the problem yesterday. You score 42 points in a playoff game, you should find a way to get a win. Mike Tomlin is obviously going to get the brunt of this because at the end of the day, he's the head coach, okay?
It all falls back on his
shoulders. Should Keith Butler, the defensive coordinator for the Steelers, should he get fired for what happened yesterday?
I think you have to look into it.
They didn't have a single sack.
Yeah.
Did not have
a
single sack in that game.
You have to put pressure, and you have to get sacks, and you didn't get any. So maybe that's a position you have to look at.
Is that a game plan? Because, again, nobody respects Blake Bortles, and I don't think he cares because he's going to the AFC Championship game. But, boy, it is an interesting storyline. And, again, Pittsburgh for a team. Steeler fans are maybe a little bit spoiled. As a fan, I would take the stability that they have because they are in the postseason every single year. They may just not be living up to expectations. And I don't believe that Mike Tomlin is on the hot seat, but I'll tell you, he's going to be under scrutiny in Pittsburgh. Yep. I think it's that simple.
And that's just the way it falls all back on the head coach and back on Mike Tomlin when it should fall on the players. It rolls down on the players.
It's more about Pittsburgh losing than it is Jacksonville winning.
Yeah.
And look, if you're a Jaguar fan, that's what happens when you're an underdog. It's what happens. You beat a legacy. You beat a legacy team. Yeah, you beat the Steelers. You beat Ben Roethlisberger. They have one of the best running backs in the game. They got one of the best wide receivers in the game. They have several standouts defensively. They've had the story with Shazier for the better half of the second part of the season. You beat a legacy yesterday. So, of course, it's more about Pittsburgh losing than it is Jacksonville winning. That's just the way it works. With that being said, would you be shocked if Jacksonville beat New England next week?
Yes.
I wouldn't be. Because I don't think they will, but it would not shock me one bit.
No, and that's the difference. You can see that, Pittsburgh does a lot of talking throughout the week, And then there's the Patriots, like you said, they just played mind games with Pittsburgh, and they got inside their head a little bit.
I think the top three defensive players in the NFL that I have religiously watched this year, Aaron Donald in L.A., Khalil Mack in Oakland, Calais Campbell in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Jacksonville also has Miles Jack. They have Telvin Smith. They have Jalen Ramsey. That defense is loaded. And the whole idea of this being Tom Brady versus Blake Bortles, that's stupid. Because that's not what it is. It's Tom Brady against that Jacksonville defense. Okay, it's Blake Bortles against a New England defense, which has improved drastically, but still has holes. I don't buy the idea of Bortles versus Brady, because at the end of the day, they're not playing each other.
No, and I want to see Ramsey on Gronk in this game. Because who's going
to... I'm excited for the matchup.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a knock-you-out type of game from Pittsburgh and Jacksonville.
And I think Jacksonville is going to deliver the goods, and I think they're going to give New England all they can handle in this game. I've told you since the beginning that Jacksonville was a wild card. They're a team that you had to pay attention to because of what they had defensively. Throw Blake Bortles out of the equation. They drafted Leonard Fournette to grind and pound. That's what that's his job. They drafted the right guy for the gig. And T.J. Yeldon's not bad either. I think Jacksonville can definitely give New England all they can handle on. I expect it. I expect a really good football game on Sunday. I wouldn't be surprised if Jacksonville won. I would be stunned if New England blew them out. Because I don't know that that offense can produce enough points to blow them out.
We'll see. Yeah, Pittsburgh put up, they put up 42.
But it was desperation
time.
It was. It was a completely different 42 points.
And that's what you got to do. You got to make New England panic just a little bit. And Tennessee did that for the most part in those two possessions where they got them off the field quick, but then they played scared the rest of the way out.
Do you think that you can make New England panic? Can you scare Tom Brady? I don't think you can at this point.
No, but you can put a little panic maybe into them.
Maybe a little bit
to pick up
doubt.
The tempo. A little bit of doubt.
Yeah, that's possible as well. I love this matchup. We're going to be talking a lot about the AFC-NFC Championship throughout the week, that's for sure. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Back to close out this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Plenty of NBA basketball going on right now. The Grizzlies in complete control with a double-digit lead over the Lakers as we get set for second-half action. Travis, this is something that we talked about last week, and I'm going to go back to it. No Lonzo Ball today for the Lakers. But to be fair, they don't have Brandon Ingram as well. You and I have been watching this game while doing the show. This team is a mess without Lonzo Ball. They're a mess without this kid.
Offensively, the ball doesn't move. They're taking a lot of bad shots. It's not good.
Let's be honest. This is a bad basketball game in general because the Grizzlies are not good. They've shut down Mike Conley, which you want to talk about bad contracts. He had one of the highest contracts, one of the richest contracts in the history of the NBA up until this last free agency period, and now he's shut down for the season. All in all, it's a bad basketball game to have on. Well, maybe that's why it started at 3:30, I guess, right? It's not a good basketball game.
No, and you can see it's just a lot of Julius Randle, a lot of dribbling,
a lot of ISO
around him and throwing up bad shots. Yeah. It's bad basketball, like you said.
Julius Randle, who is rumored to be on the move here relatively soon, a lot of ISO, wants to get paid this offseason, bad basketball game. Coming up tonight, we get the Jazz and the Pacers, 7 o'clock start time there. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. The Jazz at home, that's a good sign. The Jazz right now, 4 games out of the playoffs? If they were to start today, they'd be 4 games back of the Nuggets. It's go time. MLK Day represents so much obviously it represents a ton nationwide, but for the game of basketball, I think it kind of...
This is where it picks up
a little bit. It does, yes. This is a very big day for the NBA. You have games all day long, and this is kind of the start of the NBA season. And it's go time for the Jazz. It really is. Start of the NBA season for those teams who are not quite contenders. Maybe they're pretenders. Maybe they're in the mix. And then for the bottom feeders, if you're out of it at this point in time, well, you're on the clock, I guess, for the NBA draft. But it seems like it's the first day in such a long season that fans really rally around the NBA. Jazz basketball tonight taking on the Pacers at 7 p.m. That's going to do it for us. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. I want to thank Coach Kurt Christiansen. We will be back tomorrow to do it again right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Be safe. We are out.